Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts to receive a different morning show 7 days a week. Remember to search for The Morning Show with Greg Berg.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello, and welcome to WGTD's Education Matters. I'm your host, Jonathan Shaler, and I'm very pleased to introduce our guest today, Professor Lisa Kornetsky, a nationally recognized artist and educator who retired recently from the Theater Arts Department at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, where she worked for 22 years. While she was there, she received a Regents Teaching Award and twice won the campus Stella C. Gray Teaching Excellence Award. Lisa spent 10 years as the director of the Office of Professional and Instructional Development for the UW system, where she won the Hesburgh Award for Faculty Development Programming, and the Eugene Craven Award, given each year by UW System to a staff member for service. A founding member of Upstart Theater, Lisa has also directed at the Piccolo Spoleto Festival, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and several community theaters. In 2011, she directed a production of Bus Stop at the Milwaukee Chamber Theater in collaboration with UW Parkside. Lisa is enjoying her retirement and continues to direct theater productions and staged readings. Welcome, Lisa. It's so good to have you on the program.
I'm really delighted to be here.
Yeah. I guess I should, full disclosure, let folks know that Lisa is a personal friend who I've worked with on multiple occasions, a lot in the area of teaching and learning. So that background should be acknowledged. It's a plus, not a minus. Lisa, so we had talked a little bit about this before coming on air, about what we would focus on in this conversation. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to talk about your life in higher education, going all the way back to the time when you were a student, and how your positive and negative experiences informed your perspective on education, on teaching and learning, and then how that learning informed your own practice.
That sounds good to me. That sounds okay. Like what we discussed. So great.
Great. So where do you want to start?
Well, let's see. There are a lot of stories, so I'm trying to isolate what are the most important ones. And I think for me, when I think about my career trajectory, it really does go back to my experiences in college, my experience as a learner, as a student, and how those influenced me. Number one, just making me want to go into education and to continue that life, which I loved so much. I'm one of those people who loved being a student. Mm-hmm. But I also had some experiences that were somewhat negative, and really created this desire in me to become the teacher that I hadn't had or wanted to have, and to learn more about what inspired me, what made me eager to learn, and what really shut me down in a classroom or rehearsal hall. Mm. So I thought I would start with a couple of stories from my own experience, if that's okay to begin there.
Sure. And where are we geographically?
Okay, so we're in college, and I went to a fairly new, at the time, campus, Hampshire College in Massachusetts, which is an experimental college, a place that had very innovative ways of teaching and creating community, was the right environment for me at the time. And I knew at that point that theater was what I wanted to do. At least I thought that that was what I was going to do. And so all of the experiences that I expect to describe will be within theater environments or theater classrooms or rehearsal halls.
Wonderful.
But in my maybe sophomore year of college, I was in a theater class, in my first directing class, and my training is in directing. You know, I went on to get an MFA in directing. And so this was a new experience for me and something that I was eager to try. We had an instructor, a faculty member who was very well known in the area, a director in regional theater. I won't mention any names, but someone who had quite a reputation, who had recently come to campus as a faculty member. Mm. So I was very excited. This was my first experience with her. And like most directing classes, we did directed scenes, and then we talk and unpack what was happening. And there was one time, one particular class, where we were seeing scenes from our peers, and there was a student in the class who had cancer and was still attending campus, but he was quite ill at the time. And I remember that this was sort of this was probably the final scenes that we were doing towards the end of the semester. And I happened to know him a little bit and knew that his goal was to finish and graduate before he passed away. You know, it was terminal. It was a bad situation. He was quite ill, and that was clear in class. And he came in, and it was his turn to do his scene, and his actors were there, but it was quite clear that he was not prepared and had not completed the assignment as it had been assigned. Oh. And as he explained that, this faculty member began saying, you know, this is not appropriate. You need to come and be prepared. You will not be excused. And really to give him a very hard time. Mm-hmm. And my memory of it, and it was a long time ago, is that there were 14 of us in the class, and we sat there and watched this harangue at this terminally ill student because he was not prepared. Mm. And it was horrible for me. I just remember thinking, this is so inappropriate. And why? Several of us went to her after the class and wanted to have a dialogue with her about what had happened, because we were upset about it. And her response was, my goal is to treat everyone equally. There's an assignment. You're a member. He's a member of this class, and he didn't complete the assignment. So that's the way it goes. And she walked away. And that experience, that observation, it didn't impact me directly as a student, was it just really showed me how important even interactions with other students can be to really shut down learning.
Can I ask you a couple of questions about
absolutely.
That? So one is, she was aware of the diagnosis and the students.
Oh, absolutely.
Status. Okay, yeah. So we've got that. And if she had responded in that way with that kind of a harangue to a student who did not have a terminal diagnosis or anything like that, would that have alarmed you as well? Or would you have taken it as a matter of course?
I would probably have taken it as a matter of course, but I also will say that with this particular instructor, her way of teaching was through, from my perspective, there was a lot of bullying involved. It was very much about what people were not doing right and how people were not performing versus how people were coming to the assignment from where they were and doing their best, or doing, you know, what's their best in that moment. So I think you're right to ask that question, because I think this particular experience built on my experience with her throughout the semester, and I probably should have mentioned that.
That's fine. And not to jump the gun, but just very briefly, perhaps, could you give us an idea of how you, if you were in that situation, might have dealt with this student?
Well, I think one of the things, at least at this point in my life, that has become very clear to me is that everyone brings stuff into, you know, from their life into the classroom or the rehearsal hall, that people are struggling with all kinds of issues and problems and reasons for why they may not be as prepared as they should be. For me, I think what was missing in this story, what is important to me, is compassion. Mm-hmm. There was no compassion there. And clearly this person was doing the best he could within the situation that he was in. And to feel, from my perspective, to feel that that should be ignored because mm-hmm. it didn't belong in the classroom. In fact, I think the reverse could have happened, that we could have seen an instructor reach out and guide him through the assignment in a way that would allow him to do what he wanted to do and feel some sense of success given his circumstances. And I think all of us would have learned from that. So I think, to me, compassion is important, understanding where students come from and that we are not all the same. We have different life experiences and different things that bring us into the classroom. It's not to say mm-hmm. that people should be excused all the time for mm-hmm. things, but just a recognition that we learn from where we are. We don't all start at the same point. Mm.
So this was at the students' final presentations?
Yes, I believe so.
And you can imagine a way that this student could have been encouraged to proceed and been supported with what he had prepared. He had something.
Yes.
I mean, he didn't do everything right, but he had something.
He had something.
And that could have been acknowledged with compassion and supported. And then in terms of evaluating the student, that's a whole nother can of peas, which we don't have to get into, but that would present its own challenges, but maybe could be done separately with the student.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Next story.
So I'm going to move to, I'll go back to my, back and forth a little bit, but I'm going to move to my work life. Mm-hmm. So following college, I moved to New York City for a year to perform with friends from college. That's another story we don't have to go into right now. But of course, I needed to get a job. And fortunately for me, I was a great typist. I had learned that in high school. And at that point, you know, long before computers, I could get a job anywhere as doing secretarial work. Mm. So I applied to NYU for any kind of job. And they ended up putting me in the theater program, which was serendipitous, to work as the, I don't know, receptionist secretary for that graduate program. So my office, I didn't have an office. My desk was in a little hallway in front of all the faculty offices. So when people would come out of class, I would see the students and I would see the faculty coming in and out. So I observed a lot of things. So this isn't something that I directly experienced. I observed it. There was one faculty member at NYU who was an older man at the time, and he had been very involved with the group theater, you know, in the 30s and 40s. We're going back a number of years here. So, you know, he was at the end of his career, but he was a very prestigious acting teacher. And there were many times when people would come out of that class or one of his classes looking very disturbed. But there was one time when class ended and many students, all of whom happened to be female, and I've not really unpacked that part of it, but came out of the class sobbing, just sobbing.
Wow.
5, 6, 7 students sobbing, running out, hugging each other, collapsing. And he was the last to come in. He came in and just sort of, you know, walked into his office like this is normal.
Wow.
And I had some opportunity to talk to some of these students. And at a certain point, I went up to him and said, you know, I'm just curious, what happened in your class today?
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, you know how it is with acting students. They come in, they think they know what they know, they think they know what they're doing, but they don't. So my goal, and I remember him using that term, my goal is to beat out of them everything that they have ever learned about acting until they are a quivering mass of nothing.
Oh.
And then to spend the semester building them up and teaching them what they need to know. So the moral of that story for me was, wow, this is not education from my part. This is again, bullying. This is brutality. The idea that there is only one way to do things. Mm. And everything, again, that a student brings with them is false or wrong and needs to be, beaten out of them, to use that expression, was pretty shocking to me. So when I put those two experiences together at a time when I was trying to decide, what do I want to do in theater?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want to do in my career? I started to think about, maybe I don't want to be a performer. Maybe I'm interested in performing and I'm interested in production, but maybe what I really want to do is be a teacher and be the kind of teacher that works against that sort of master teacher model.
Uh-huh.
I'm the teacher. I know what's right. You're the student. My goal is to give you information that you use. And I think it's important to also note, as you know, that in theater, when you're talking about performance, when you're talking about acting, you're asking people to reveal a lot about them, to do some very personal kind of work. It's not purely an academic, it's not math,
right.
It's not science. So you are really dealing with people's, particularly at that point in their life, fragile egos.
Yes.
And it's hard to see those egos be destroyed time after time after time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you came out of this with a sense of how you wanted to be more nurturing, more supportive. And yet you are an artist. You do have a way of working. You do have a vision of your production. So could you walk us through maybe either a classroom experience? It could be hypothetical. It doesn't have to be an actual one that you concretely recall. But a classroom setting or a production setting, and give us a sense of who Lisa Kornetsky is in that space and how she's working with students.
Sure. I would just, as a caveat, I would say that my way of working is, obviously very personal to me, and not the way many other theater acting teachers or directors work. For me, I will just start by saying that creating a comfortable, nurturing, I like that word, environment for actors or students, particularly in a performance classroom, is key to my ability to be the best teacher I can be, but to my ability to coax, to guide, to mentor students into doing their best work. So that feels very important to me. A compassionate classroom or rehearsal hall where people feel safe is really important. And I think it becomes increasingly important in the world that we live in and the kinds of issues that actors, students, people are bringing to the table. So I look for a way to understand where individual actors are coming from. Let's talk about a rehearsal hall, what their experience is. And my goal is to figure out how to bring them to the point where I can accomplish the vision that I have. So I guess an example I could use is probably towards the end of my time at Parkside, I directed a play by Paula Vogel called How I Learned to Drive. And I don't know if you saw that production or know that play, but it is a play. It's a beautiful play. It is non-linear.
I did see it. I'm sorry. I was just reaching back. Yes, I did see it.
Yes,
go ahead.
It's a non-linear play, but it's about, it focuses on a young woman. It is a memory play. So she is telling it from her middle-aged self, is telling the story about her family, but specifically her relationship with her uncle, who she loved, who also sexually abused her for a number of years. And that the inciting incident is him teaching her to drive. So the play takes three quarters of the time before we get to see the scene where the first however we want to describe it, happens.
Assault, yes.
Assault, yeah. And as we worked on that play, it became really important to not pretend that we didn't understand what was happening and the impact of what was happening and the impact for the character, but also the impact for those two actors to play that and have to actually, in a theatrical way, act out that scene or a part of that scene. But also for all of us who were in the production, all of us who were in the room, in terms of, you know, how do we get there? How does this impact us? Because we know that an awful lot of people have, particularly college students, have experienced assault and have experienced all kinds of, you know, rape, all kinds of things. And I knew that that was the case just from knowing students for one or two people who were in the cast, that there had been some kind of experience. So if I use that as an example, if I had ignored that, if I had not found a way to have us talk about it, to have us not necessarily, nobody had to reveal anything, but talk about the impact of this, what this meant, what this is in our society, and also specifically how it played out for this young woman and this man. So I think creating that nurturing environment and a place where people felt really safe became really important. And that, I think, is how I like to think of my directing most of the time. Go ahead.
Okay. So I will have a question for you about that. But first I want to do a station identification. This is WGTD Radio. You're listening to Education Matters. I'm your host, Jonathan Shaler, and we are speaking with theater professor Lisa Kornetsky. We were just talking about a particular production, How I Learned to Drive by Paula Vogel, and the challenges faced in that production, given that the story centers, the memory play centers on a relationship between an uncle and his niece.
Young niece.
And there's sexual abuse involved. So if I could ask, I don't know if you recall, but I'm very curious if you could point to one or two things that you did to help make sure that this was a safe environment and that people were ready to move forward.
So today, in 2024, there are intimacy directors.
Yes.
We didn't have intimacy directors. I mean, they probably existed, but I wasn't aware of them at that time. And this play was maybe 2013, something like that. So that fell to me to choreograph that scene, you know, physically. And it was, you know, it wasn't blatant, but it was clear what was happening. But also to make sure that people felt comfortable. So the way that I approached it, which I think in this situation worked well, was for those people who don't know theater, was to stage the play, to start working on character, to develop certain scenes, to talk about that scene in some depth, and to wait until we were ready towards the end of the process to actually stage the scene so that the relationship had been developed, the play had been developed, the story was clear, the actors understood their role and why they were doing what they were doing, what had happened in that scene, so that they were ready and everyone else was ready, although they were the only people in the room when we staged it the first time. And I just had to make sure that they were comfortable enough to go to that place. And I think that was from a lot of conversation, a lot of coaching, a lot of going very slowly and making sure that people had the framework to be able to do it without having a lot of ego destruction or, you know, personal destruction as they went through that, particularly for the woman playing the role of the niece. And that's what we did. And it was a very emotional night of rehearsal. And then the actors asked for the other actors who were in another room to come in and because they would be on stage when this happened, and to be part of it, they wanted the support of their fellow actors. And we ran the scene with everyone. So it's the kind of play where there's a scene happening, but there are other people nearby.
So you first rehearsed it alone with those actors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think what's important about this in terms of my work is creating a safe environment where people can learn in a way that, that may push them and should push them.
Mm-hmm.
But where there isn't a lot of personal damage. And I think in theater so often, it is very easy to forget that you're dealing with people's experiences, you're dealing with people's imagination, and that often, particularly in drama, serious things happen that are difficult, particularly for young actors, to kind of absorb into their world and their understanding.
I have a question about that. The did the students give you any feedback on how that journey and process went for them with that play?
So I'm a talker, as you know, as everybody is gonna know by the end of this. And I always process difficult discussions later. And we had a brief conversation afterwards to make sure everyone was okay when they went home. And then at the next rehearsal, we spent probably half the rehearsal just talking about what had happened, how people felt about it, how we would move forward, what needed to change, what their experience was from the night before to, you know, today when we discussed it. And we revisited it at various points. I do think one of those actors, I have to look, it wrote me something about the experience and how she felt that she was very concerned being cast in that role about how she would move forward with that and how she felt ultimately that she learned a lot about herself and that she was as prepared as she could be to finally stage that moment.
This is fascinating to me. Thank you for that story. I just wanted to highlight or note an issue that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to in education, which is there's a kind of spectrum where you can be at one end reckless or abusive. Maybe abusive is at the far end, and then reckless is a little further in. But at the other end of the scale, so overly protective that you're smothering and nothing authentic happens. And then there's somewhere in the middle, and I just find that really interesting about how we can move back and forth on that scale, because I think I've seen both recklessness and overprotectiveness in terms of teaching learning environments. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, certainly. And I think it is contextual. So being a good, for me, being a good teacher means recognizing where I needed to be, you know, firm and clear and I would be surprised, but I don't know that anybody would say that I bullied them in class because I was so against that. But certainly being, you know, adhering to the syllabus and what the requirements were and what people need to do. There are other classes or situations, and rehearsals are different, I think. For me, they're different. Where being compassionate and loving in that situation felt very important. And I use that word loving because for me, particularly in a play like that, I mean, I love the words. I love the plays. I love what they're trying to say. And I feel that part of getting people into really difficult situations as actors means that you have to push them to get where they need to go, but you need to do that with love and compassion. And by love, I mean, that's maybe the wrong word to use, but to me, it's about helping them to get where they need to go and pushing them to do the things that are hard, where they know that they're not, you know, that you're there for them. You're allowing that for them. And that's really different than in a, you know, theater history class or, you know, a more structured academic course.
So what if you had, I'm going to ask a daring question and you can reject it if you want to, but it doesn't have to be this production. It could be any production, but let's say I'm your actor and I'm feeling ambivalent, but I signed on to playing an abusive character. I'm typecasting myself since I'm an older white male. Cringe. And I could be a victim. It's possible too, but let's stick with the perpetrator. And so I'm, and now we're about to stage a scene where I'm grooming somebody or I'm assaulting somebody. And I'm shaking my head and saying, I don't know if I can do this. What would you say to me?
Great question. Well, first of all, I probably wouldn't have cast you if I had any sense of who you were around that. But, you know.
All right. Let's say it's not quite that bad.
But, I'm a little nervous. Given that, I think it would involve a lot of conversation and a lot of, this play is unusual in that it is so demanding of real sensitivity and sort of exposure. I think that I would be having a lot of conversation and challenging you. This is what I need you to do. This is where you seem to be. This is where I need you to go. Mm-hmm. What can I do to help you to get there? And do you believe that you can get there within the framework that I've outlined for you? Mm-hmm. If you can't, then I've made a mistake. And perhaps we need to rethink your, I've never fired an actor, so this is, hypothetical. I can't think of too many situations in sensitive kinds of material. I can't really think of any where I haven't felt that I could lead an actor where they needed to go. Sometimes there are actors who take a lot of your time and attention and you need to try multiple ways to get someone where they're going. I'm not answering the question.
No, it's a good question. So could I tell you a short story?
Sure.
Okay. And I don't know, I may have told you this at another time, but our audience certainly hasn't heard it. And I think it touches on these issues you've been describing, and I kind of want to offer it as a case study, but also I would like to hear you respond to it, both in terms of what you see going on in this story and how you might have approached the situation. So did I ever tell you the story about, and I want to also be careful about protecting people's identities, of when I was an actor in a production and I had to play an abusive father?
I don't think you
Doesn't come up. Okay.
It's not ring a bell.
So I'll try to keep this short, but it was a scene where my wife was leaving me and I was shocked and surprised and pained, and I'm trying to talk her out of it, and I'm getting more and more upset. And there's a history of abuse in the relationship, and this guy has a drinking and anger problem, so all that can fuel him. And the director, this was a scene that we were developing. It was devised theater, so there was no script. We were creating the play as we were acting it. So there's a lot of room for improvisation and exploration. Still, we had certain marks to hit, certain things had to happen, and the director kept encouraging me to go harder, go stronger with this character in terms of his threatening behavior towards the wife as she tries to leave the home. So I did amp it up considerably, and I'm able to be quite scary, and I was. I was probably channeling something from experiences I had had as a child, being bullied or frightened. So the resource was there. I got very scary. And I, as I'm in the middle of ranting at my wife, I hear the director saying, "Stop, stop, stop." And everybody freezes. And I look at the director and he says, "You are out of control. You are out of control." And I stood there thinking, was I out of control? I know I was very emotionally intense. I'm not sure what I was going to do next, but I wasn't going to do anything really violent.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I said to the director, "I thought you wanted me to be stronger." And he said, "Yeah, but not like you're going to kill her." And somehow we reset, and I brought it down a couple of notches, and we continued. But I was a little shaken, actually, by the experience, because the director had actually yelled at me, is what it felt like. And I had been experiencing something. You know, sometimes actors experience something emotionally. And so what might have frightened him might have been the authenticity of that rage. Like, that was a little too real. That's part of my interpretation. The only other footnote I'll give you on this is that another actor in another scene had played a woman who lost a child, and the actor became completely overwhelmed by the experience and began sobbing on stage. And the director stopped everything and knelt beside her and gently spoke to her about what she was going through. And some things occurred to me, which were that gender may play a role here, but also it's easier to deal with emotional outflows that are sad rather than angry. So I hope I didn't say too much and leave you not a lot of room to
No, comment. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about what you, okay, both of these things that you've described. And certainly in my own experience, you know, I've seen situations where people have what I would call lost control. In those situations, it's been clear to me that that the director, or if it was in a classroom situation, was not controlling how this development of emotion was going to happen. And mm-hmm. I think that's what you're describing for you. So when I think about what the, I mean, I'm sure there's more to the story than what you told me, but your experience, I would immediately, my immediate thought was, by telling you do more, be bigger with something that emotional, there wasn't enough structure for you to do anything other than have that uncontrolled feeling come forward, right? Mm-hmm. And that to me is not healthy. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that you're having that experience is bad for you as an actor, mm-hmm. necessarily. But it needs to be controlled, and I feel like as a director, you always need to know that you can pull someone back in a safe way from wherever they go.
And I should note that we checked in with the other actor, the woman who played my wife, to make sure she was doing all right and how she was, and she was okay. Go ahead.
She was okay.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like the director got scared, right?
Yeah.
Scared that something would happen. And sometimes things can happen. So, I think the role of a director is to always be in control, to know how to get the actor there at the right time. So much of directing is timing, right? Mm-hmm. You don't do all the hard stuff at the beginning. You have a period of time where you get from the first rehearsal to the first performance. And for me, I always think of like, what are the points that I have to hit, and what do I have to do when? Mm-hmm. I just directed a community theater production. And in that situation, I would just add that, there were people with, as there is in community theater, people with no experience, people with a lot of experience. and figuring out when to sort of put in the little bit of instruction for the cast about things, you know, it couldn't start right away with, okay, this is how we build a character. This is how we build a scene, you know, that needed to happen over time. So perhaps with big emotions from my perspective, doing them at the right time with the right structure and with safeguards in place is really important.
I know this is a lot to ask, but what might you have, let's say that you ended up in that situation, unfortunately, where your actor got too big with their emotion. Would you have pulled the emergency brake like this director? I know this is, I'm trying to rewrite the past here, but, or I'm just curious, or would you have let it ride and see where it went, or would you have done something else?
Well, this is probably not the kind of answer that is helpful, but I think I would say with, and this probably has a lot to do with my own experience. You know, we bring our own experience. Actors bring their experience. So do directors and teachers. But I think there is, as you said, a real difference between sadness for, you know, and anger. And I think from my own experience, I can say that I have let sadness play out. And I don't think that I would let anger play out.
Yeah.
Because I do think that often we don't know what those triggers are. Mm-hmm. They can both be damaging, you know, after the fact. But I would never want to see someone lose control to the point where it was damaging to them and to others. And with sadness, I feel like I've had enough experience to be able to talk people out of that. I mean, if somebody's really losing it, that's another thing.
Yeah. So you would stop it, and then what would you do?
Then we talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of talking about things, we have about a minute. Can you believe that?
I have like 55 other things on my pad of paper here, but yes.
So give me your elevator speech.
Oh, God, about, my elevator speech.
What has been the most important thing that you've learned about teaching and learning that you would like to pass on to others, like one thing?
Relationships. I think relationships are really important. Relationships with the material, relationships with students, creating a healthy learning environment where everyone, wherever they come from, can feel like they have a chance to be successful, has a lot to do with the environment that you create. And to go back to your other point, I do think, you know, structure and being firm about things is important, but having those individual relationships or ability to see what students might need to help them be successful, a little extra coaching that they might need to help them be successful, has helped me a lot as a teacher to feel that I've been successful in helping, creating an environment where students can be learners together and can flourish.
Beautiful. Lisa, that is a wonderful description of your approach to teaching and learning, and I hope our audience carries away some of that wisdom with them and can bring it into their own classrooms. I wish I had had an opportunity to be your student at one point in time.
I wish I had had an opportunity to be your student.
Oh,
so
wow.
Look, there's a future collaboration.
This love fest is going too far. This is a good time to wrap it up. Folks, this has been an interview with Lisa Kornetsky, theater professor, recently retired from UW Parkside, and I'm your host, Jonathan Shaler. This is WGTD Education Matters.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org. I'm Gregory Berg. The studios of WGTD will be closed on Monday because of Martin Luther King Day, so there will be no morning show broadcast. But there will be a morning show podcast, and it will feature a conversation with the author of a very interesting book called An Idea Whose Time Has Come, which chronicles the many years of effort that ultimately led to the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964. Look for the morning show with Greg Berg wherever you get your podcasts.
WGTD.org is your portal to public radio, beginning with local news, station information,